Live in 3, 2.
Hey!
La la la.
What is up, you rotten oranges? Welcome to No Holds Barred. Before we launch in, I'm going to hitch up with the word of the week. This is where we take a word that is Shakespearean, off-putting, confusing, troubling, makes you hate Shakespeare when you read it for the first time because you have no idea what it means. Break it down, catch our breath, and then try to sneak it past Kevin during the podcast. Hi, Bruce. This week, the word of the week is "ih." "Ih." I apostrophe. It's a contraction meaning in. In the name of God, if you blow up my spot on word of the week, I'll lose it. Yes, if faith, I will. Here we go. No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. This week we'll shape fancy, explore the poles of Egypt, and distribute Shakespeare's birthday punches among the entirety of our live studio audience. But first, let's duel.
It's not going to work.
Uh-oh.
Close enough. In the duel, we choose three questions at the intersection of Shakespeare and the present day and take 45-ish seconds to hash out the best answer. Dan won the coin flip before the show and has elected to go first. So here we go.
Yes.
Haley Lancaster, who is at Yup, It's Lancaster on Twitter, tweeted us to ask, if I make my film lit class a, quote, subversive Shakespeare, end quote, class next year, which film should I show?
Sweet. I love the idea of subversion in all forms. So I think, Haley, for this, that kind of rules out any of the movies that are just like Much Ado About Nothing, like the obvious Shakespeare plays. So I'm going to go with The Lion King.
Real subversive.
Real subversive. Hamlet, 1994. Think about this. High school sophomores, this movie came out 7 years before they were born.
Oh my God.
Right? So like, this is something they may not know. When they should know, and not just as a Broadway musical, but as like a piece of subversive Shakespearean literature. So I think we have, I mean, you have Scar and Mufasa, who are both related. They're consanguineous. Uh-huh. They're of a bloodline. So I feel like that is something that, nice work, everyone. So I feel like that is something that is important to do. So I'm going to go with The Lion King for my answer. What's up, Haley?
Great. Well, you took my answer for the most.
Seriously?
No, not at all. The first one that came to my mind, you know, subversive meaning seeking or intended to subvert an established system or institution, as
Thanks,
we all
Oxford.
Know. The first movie that comes to my mind is the Troma film, Tromeo and Juliet. Have you ever seen that?
No.
We'll
pop in the crowd.
Little big Tromeo fans. I can't say I'd recommend it. It's really terrible.
Okay.
But it is very subversive because Tromeo does these like C-grade... I think they did Toxic Avenger as their big one. Yeah. And it's a Romeo and Juliet version of that.
Okay.
That literally culminates with like Juliet turns into a monster with a 3-foot penis. And the last shot, it fades into someone in a Shakespeare costume. Someone dressed as Shakespeare laughing hysterically.
Oh.
And it's all contemporary, but like that's the last shot. Like Shakespeare would have loved this.
And this is for a high school lit class?
Yeah.
3-foot dick? That sounds
told,
great.
I was told subversive. Question okay. number two, Megan Tripaldi emailed us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com to ask, so this may be a bit sacrilegious, but what is your favorite play inspired by or adapted from Shakespeare's texts? I know the Oregon Shakespeare Festival is quote-unquote translating the canon into modern English, so for the purposes of this question, I'm talking about new plays inspired by his work.
Okay.
So the trick here is plays, right? Because, oh my God.
A trick is plays?
Well, because there are a million movies,
yeah,
you know, and a million books, but like how many plays are really inspired by Shakespeare?
Okay.
So I went with my, at least the one that I've enjoyed the most, which is Sleep No More. Okay. Which now I'm thinking isn't also technically a play. Can I get a show of hands?
A lot of head nods.
All right, all right. We're going to take it's like Family Feud. Show me Sleep No More. It's my first X for the night. Yeah. Okay, easy. Down. Down, you
know, the things we can't edit out.
Sleep No More is a reimagination of Mackers combined with the Hitchcock movie Rebecca, kind of mished together. It's Rebecca, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is great. Usually we have to like Google and it takes like 10 minutes and now it's like, oh, you guys know.
You're right. That's right.
But you know, you get that in a new and interesting way that illuminates from the side, I guess.
Sure.
So Sleep No More.
Nice. I'm going to go with the play that I was actually introduced to while doing a production of Romeo and Juliet almost more than a decade ago from Twitter, at who but Tim Jacobs. We're doing a production of Romeo and Juliet, and it was Elizabeth Rex. It was by Timothy Findlay. It is the premise is it's the night before Essex is going to be executed, so the queen commissions a performance of Much Ado. And the lead actor, Ned Ravenscroft, is playing Beatrice, is like the leading female actor of his time. So there's this great line where the queen, who is mourning the death of her lover, has to come to terms with that death in the morning. So she commissions this play, but there's a gay man playing Beatrice who is dying of syphilis. So it's a play about gender, but also there's this great line where she's like, if you teach me how to be a man, I can teach you how to be a woman. Uh-huh. And it's really neat. It's a fascinating like piece of fanfic and not done nearly enough.
Yeah.
So I've never even Elizabeth Rex.
There we go. Question number three. Finally, the Boston Angler, Liam Billingham, who is here tonight. Let's hear it for Liam. he sent us an email at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah.
He writes.
Well, first of all, long time,
an open mic. Just read the question.
Long time downloader, first time listener. So this week, to illustrate how cool I am, I went and saw a band called the Decemberists.
This week,
and
he's been seeing this band for 15 years.
Yeah, it's true. And the song "The Island," which is 11 minutes, is based on The Tempest. So, what other of Shakespeare's plays deserves a song cycle / concept album?
And Sorry.
Thank you, Liam.
What was the question?
What other play of Shakespeare's deserves a song cycle / concept album, Daniel?
Nice. Well, that song you mentioned is 11 minutes long, Liam. So that was about how long it took you to ask that question. So I'm going to go... You're welcome. I'm going to go with Midsummer Night's Dream, and I'd like to see Sufjan Stevens do an album for that. I think, you know, fan of Brooklyn, a nice little pop in the Brooklyn pop here for Sufjan. Some things that are noteworthy about his writing style is various time signatures. So the meter in Midsummer is all over the place with the fairies and the humans. So I think that's kind of cool to go for that. What else? He writes with a lot of instruments, so there's a lot of different kind of sound in Midsummer. I also just think you have that court and in the woods. And I think if I could get Sufjan to underscore a Midsummer and then direct that Midsummer, it'd be badass.
Really?
Oh, is that a swear? Does that count?
It's not great, but it's fine.
Okay, it's not great.
All right.
Sufjan Stevens, if you're listening, what's up?
I think he's on the live stream. I'm not sure.
I think he is.
There wasn't a part of this. I wasn't instructed to get a composer, so you went above and beyond. Kudos to you.
Always.
But for me, for a song cycle, I want to go to the United Antonio theory that we threw out in the fan theory episode, which is the idea that it's the same Antonio going from Twelfth Night to The Tempest to Merchant to Much Ado, that it's the same guy and his crippling sadness throughout, which is very Decemberists. It's like you can have a song about him being like a pirate, which is a Decemberist song, and a song about like him overthrowing his brother, which I feel like the Decemberist, in like a shipwreck, lots of boats, maybe he's like on a train at some point. It's very Decemberist. So I would take the United Antonio theory.
Nice.
And also to give that a little plug, since I'm surely not going to write about it, so that way it can actually happen. Anyways,
nice music.
That is how we duel. If you have a question you'd like to see featured in a future edition of The Duel, please send it our way. We are at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. We are on Twitter at noholdsbarredcast. And we are on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. Daniel.
Yes.
Shall we do some homework?
Yes, Faith.
Right? You guys can just sing along with the bumps.
Doo-doo. Yeah, Meg.
This is a longer belt. This is the part of the program where I pull a Shakespearean homework question from the internet, and Dan and I do our best to pull together a coherent answer, no matter how stupid the question or how pressing the deadline. This episode's question comes from Yahoo Answers user Maria under the heading...
It's Mariah.
Fine. Under the heading, was Cleopatra bipolar? She asks, in Shakespeare's play, Cleopatra is described as bipolar and hysterical. Is this based on some evidence? If so, what? Two question marks.
Can we hear that with two question marks?
If so, what? Or was this just Shakespeare's way to add some colorful drama to his work? So, Dan.
Yeah.
Was Cleopatra bipolar?
Yes and no.
Okay. Well, first thing I want to jump out while you're scribbling.
Thank you.
Nice.
You like that? Okay. You see what I did there? That's a joke.
I'm very impressed.
That was a joke.
To be clear... Cleopatra is at no point described as bipolar or hysterical in the text. Bipolar, I'm pretty sure, is a phrase that didn't come into existence until like 30 years ago. Right. So Mariah...
Was that Freud? Is bipolar Freud?
No, it's way
audience?
Later.
No, I got it.
No.
Nope. Okay, cool.
This is great. It's like a... ask the audience. No.
Cool. Incorrect. Great.
Great. Moving on. Or hysterical. Neither of those words are used to describe Cleopatra at any point in this play.
Okay. So what would, so for our working definition of bipolar, what are we going off of? Like mood swings?
Yeah, like manic mood swings in personality, I suppose.
Sure.
Going from, yeah.
Because I don't.
Pole to pole.
Pole to pole. Yeah, okay. All right. And then hysterical meaning.
Well, let's pull up. Vamp a little bit. I'll go to our producer, Ted, and get the definition of bipolar.
I could tell you, I once went to a therapist, and I was like, am I bipolar? And they're like, no. Yeah, once. Nice. Thanks, Liam. More than once. And I was like, I think I'm definitely bipolar. He's like, I assure you, you're not. And I was like, okay, you're right.
Bipolar disorder, also known as manic depression, is a mental disorder that causes periods of depression and periods of elevated mood. The elevated mood is significant and known as mania or hypermania, depending on its severity or whether symptoms of psychosis are present.
Hmm.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So, I mean, the root of the question is basically because Cleopatra's all over the place.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, I love him, I hate him, I love him, I hate him, which feels very human as opposed to being necessarily bipolar.
Yeah, I think that it comes more from a place of... like, Cleopatra is so good at working with the different situations that she's in.
Yeah.
Like, she has to handle Octavius Caesar in a different way that she handles the messengers, in a different way that she handles, you know, her women, in a different way that she handles, you know, Mark Antony.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like just being able to, it's almost like she's a great actress in that she's able to go to all these different places and use all these different motivations.
Right.
You know, because she berates Mark Antony into being like, all right, well, it's cool to see you, but you're going to go back to Fulvia, so I don't even know. I'm just going to go. And he's like, stop it. And she's like, no.
Right.
No. I mean, yes, but no. But it's like, I don't think that's her being manic. I think it's her playing Mark Antony like a drum.
Coined by Carl Leonard. Thanks, Kale. This is amazing. Okay, so we're going to cover all this later.
That's good.
That's right. I think it's, I mean, this is a very deceptively tough question,
mm-hmm.
because you're looking at someone. I mean, Cleopatra in the play. We did a workshop on Richard III a year ago, and we did this whole workshop. And at the end, we're like, okay, any Q&A, and it was basically a text workshop.
Uh-huh.
And in the Q&A, and the first student raised their hand. We're like, is Richard a sociopath?
Uh-huh.
And we started to answer it, and one of the teachers was like, kids nowadays just love diagnosing things.
Okay.
As opposed to just, like, students are obsessed with this diagnosis. And I wonder if it's more than just students. But there is something to the fact of, what does it change? What does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is a queen.
Yeah.
She is a powerful woman. Mm-hmm. And she is a human who is in love.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that more important than putting some sort of, like, medical label on Cleopatra?
Yeah. And I also don't, I mean, I don't think that she really gives us any evidence that she has, like, a mental disorder. And, like, what would the evidence, that's maybe the more interesting way to take this, is what would the evidence be that she does have, you know, this type of thing? There is no scene wherein she's doing something that is out of nowhere, you know, like everything she does is justified when you look at, like, she is trying to survive. She's in Egypt trying to stand up to Rome.
Right.
Like, she's got to do what she's got to do for her people. And then also her love for Mark Antony.
Right.
But I think just changing tactics isn't a sign of some sort of mental disorder.
Yeah.
You know?
It seems like a cheap choice to just go, oh no, let's play a label as opposed to playing a human.
Yeah.
As an actor or as a director, that seems like a really, I can't swear on Facebook Live. This seems like a really bad idea. It just seems like there are more interesting choices if you're willing to dig deep and go, you know what, this is a human who is acting maybe not like she normally would, or maybe not rationally. But because that's what the situation demands.
Yeah.
That's what that makes someone relatable.
Yeah.
Because how else do you make a queen relatable?
Yeah.
It's like, we don't know that as a commoner.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
So let's write our three paragraphs in our 5-point AP essay here that we are going to, if the question is Cleopatra bipolar or hysterical, I suppose, we're going to say no.
Correct.
And the paragraphs are?
I might not even say no. I might just be like, this is a bad question.
Of course you would.
Right. Like this, what is this?
Because that's what the AP English auditor, who's correcting like 700 of these, is excited for some kid from New Hampshire to be like, I actually question the whole educational system. I question the entire thing that this is based on.
I question
that
everything.
Sounds like a two, is what I'm hearing there.
A two?
Would you stop? Okay, so what are our paragraphs here?
I think that it's the thesis statement here is, whether or not Cleopatra, no. There is no point in medically diagnosing a character in a play because it strips them away of an element of their humanity.
Sure. By putting them in this box.
It's not useful. Pre-prescribed.
It's not useful as an actor or a director. Presupposed?
Presupposed.
That's a word. There's no evidence, you know, her actions are, this is not going to be, we are not getting a five on this one.
We are getting a six.
Okay.
It's not actable. That's not an act. That's not an action. That's an adjective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the end of the day, this is a play.
Yeah.
You gotta play action.
Uh-huh.
I'm very upset about this essay. Upset about this question.
Is Richard III a sociopath? Did we cover that?
Now is the winter of our discontent. Made glorious summer.
So we're going to say it's not actionable.
Yep. Not actionable.
There's no evidence and...
Not textually supported.
This is a stupid question.
And you're... Yeah.
Cool.
And we'll get a four and we'll go to college.
We'll go to UNH. Sounds good. All right.
I believe in UNH.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Go Cats. There you go. Shall we move on?
Sure.
To some everyday shakes. This is the section of the show where we pull a phrase from Shakespeare and show you how to use it in your everyday conversation. This week's phrase is, so full of shapes is fancy that it alone is high fantastical, as featured in Act 1, Scene 1 of Twelfth Night. Let's hear the phrase in context.
Yes. So I was commissioned to bring in a stunning actor to read this, and we have so many in the room. I want to bring in the most... This is what Bill Belichick taught me, is bring in the best person for the job. So if I may, I'm going to call up... me.
Oh my God.
If music be the food of love, play on. Give me excess of it that surfeiting the appetite may sicken and so die. That strain again. God. It had a dying fall. Oh, it came o'er my ear like the sweet sound that breathes upon a bank of violets, stealing and giving odor. Enough, no more. 'Tis not so sweet now as it was before. Oh, spirit of love, how quick and fresh art thou, that notwithstanding thy capacity receiveth as the seed, not enters there of what validity and pitch so e'er, but falls into abatement and low price even in a minute. So full of shapes is fancy that it alone is high fantastical.
There you go. That was So Full of Shapes is Fancy That It Alone is High Fantastical, as featured in Act 1, Scene 1 of Twelfth Night. Daniel,
yeah.
You want to give us a little context on this? Should be pretty easy. Maybe it's the banana suit. I don't want to...
It's bananas. Mm. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. This is Act 1, Scene 1. This is the first line of the play. We're meeting Orsino. Well, this isn't the first line. It's the first monologue. So this is the end of the first monologue. But we do open with Orsino, who is in love with love, and is talking about how great it is to be in love. And this line in particular is just talking about that love is the ultimate love. This idea of, or so full of shapes is fancy. Fancy the power of imagination, the power of just what could be is the most important thing. It is the highest regard of like, wouldn't that be great? Mm-hmm. That is like everything else. When you meet it and you touch it and you hold it, the reality of it corrupts it in a sense that the realest thing, the best thing, is fantasy.
Okay.
Or is this sort of like, I mean, the idea of love is almost greater than love itself.
Okay.
Interesting. Or the power of imagination is stronger than the reality of a situation.
Okay. So how would you use that in your everyday conversation?
I use it all the time.
Oh, my God.
For example, with the notion currently that the four Boston major sports teams could, in fact, all win world championships this year.
Uh-huh.
Which could be, I mean, the Bruins, can someone give me a Bruins score on this Facebook feed? The Bruins are in game six right now. But if they, I mean, they're probably the least likely to do it. Of the Patriots have already done their job because New England, am I right? Yeah, a little pop.
I'm all right.
The Seas, number one seed. Mm-hmm. Sox look great. Mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't it be great? So full of shapes is fancy that it alone is high fantastical that the Boston sports team could take all four this year.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, that's funny because I went the other way, and maybe this is more of a reflection on the difference between you and I, that so full of shapes is fancy that it alone is high fantastical. I took fantastical to lean more in the unpredictable direction.
Okay.
So, you know, when your passion is so overwhelming that, like, when the Red Sox are on the verge of defeating the Yankees in 2003, and a friend of yours comes into the room right before Grady Little leaves Pedro Martinez in two batters too long, and so you take this dear friend of yours and you tell him to get the hell out of your living room and you throw him out, which I did to you.
Yeah, you were also in a ball on the floor.
Well, I was high fantastical for certain.
You were high? Is that legally binding?
No. No, I wish I was. Then I might forget it.
Right.
Right. Or, you know, I feel like it's also, I mean, it's every time you've done something stupid because you were in love or, you know, something irrational, perhaps, because you were in love.
Right.
You know? Where is fancy bread? You know, that type of going down.
Fancy bread? Like Wonder Bread?
Like Wonder Bread. Knock off Wonder Bread.
The opposite of Wonder Bread is fancy bread. Fancy is actually interesting. I looked up fancy and the first meaning is love or amorousness, but then this is all, of course, on shakespearswords.com in the glossary. But of the next four definitions, three of the four included as a primary word imagination.
Okay.
So if you think about that sense of like the world of imagination, like Willy Wonka world.
Sure.
There's that sense of, I remember just this week I was walking through Prospect Park and working on As You Like It.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of, I may have been high fantastical at the time. I'm not going to say that legally. Cool. I was fantastic is what I'm saying.
As our friends from the FBI kick in the door.
I've been waiting. So it's that sort of sense of this is unreal. Mm-hmm. And I was working on this tree in the backyard and I picked up a piece of bark that I really was like, this is going to be perfect for this tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this bird call. And I was like, this is a true story. This is a really true story. I heard this bird call. And I was like, what was that? So I walk over and it's a peacock.
Talking to you.
Talking to me. It was a peacock. Yes. You know the peacock call. It was on top of a
is
light.
Is this like an Illuminati trigger situation that we're going into here?
No, seriously. There was a peacock sitting on top of a light. Because I guess it was getting heat. I later learned from my aviary friend who was selling me a bird feeder. But
Is this real?
This is real. I have pictures. There's a picture.
I don't want to.
I'm in airplane mode.
It's probably for the best.
Oh, hey, right. But yeah, I have pictures of this peacock. But it was so crazy that I was like, so full of shapes is fancy that this alone is high fantastical.
And that's literally where I see.
No, I mean, yeah. Yeah, you see?
I see. I do see now. That is certainly the most appropriate everyday shakes application when a peacock talks to you while working on an outdoor tree sculpture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
This happens in my life on a weekly basis.
I completely believe that. All right.
You have more?
I'm not after that. How can I beat that?
I have more.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm not going to double up.
I have nothing more. I have nothing more whatever that was than that.
Okay. I guess that's it then.
Okay, great.
Well, I have some high Prosecco to share.
Does that just mean you want me to vamp or are you about to?
If you were going to celebrate Shakespeare's birthday.
Sure.
Like you would. And you wanted to get some high fantastical.
Oh,
literally, it's high Prosecco.
That's good. We have props. This is a carrot top bit now.
I can't see, but I would pop this for everyone in the room.
Okay, kick it. All right, we are on to the end game here. Plugs, corrections, banter, word of the week. Oh, we have a show of hands. All right, let's. Oh, heckling. That's Liam Billingham raising eyebrows at. Liam, what would your What would your most subversive Shakespeare inspired?
So there's the 2000 Hamlet with Ethan Hawke, where he does "To Be or Not to Be" in the Blockbuster video.
Can you speak to the room, please? We're all here.
Sorry about Dan. I've known him a long time. There's the 2000 Hamlet where Ethan Hawke does the "To Be or Not to Be" monologue in a Blockbuster video, and I just feel like the Lion King is a fairly bland.
Sure. Pretty direct feedback here.
Yeah, no, it's a good movie,
so
no question.
When you're trying to hijack a lit course, you're going to do Hamlet. Like, how do I sneak Shakespeare by them?
Ooh, they're going to fight.
Let
this
me just
real.
Do, oh, I don't know, play a movie called Hamlet. Like, it's
why
Hamlet.
Would I, why, well, first of all, I really wish I hadn't stepped up, but I don't.
So
I don't,
do I.
You can go anytime. All right, Liam Billingham, everyone. Thank you.
All right, well, no, I'm not.
I know you're not done.
Point
somebody,
for me.
Somebody ripped the microphone out of his hands.
All right, bye.
CP has been keeping track of our feedback.
CP, come on up, CP. No, come on. Come
no,
on,
we,
come
have
on.
We have a
guest mic. You're allowed. You're allowed on the screen. Not
yes, CP, who is the third member of our Seven Stages crew. Welcome.
Hi.
I'm here for CP.
Oh.
Woo!
Oh, it's not. It's all the way over there. I can't, team. But anyway,
it.
My drink. You guys, your mom and dad are here.
Oh, good. Hi, mom and dad.
Hello. Tommy C's is angry for some reason. He hit the angry button.
Oh, Tommy, Dad, what are you mad about?
Right. So I wanted to just let you know that you should maybe give them a little love.
I'm guessing he's upset about Grady Little leaving Pedro Martinez in. If I had to guess, that was a reflexive angry. And now he's probably blacked out with rage from that 14-year-old event. But, Pop, let me know.
Oh, God. Mr. Bruce Pingree also sends his love your
Bruce.
Way.
Bruce.
Does he have broken legs? Is that what this says?
It just said, break a leg, Bruce.
Oh, wish broken leg. I get it.
Yeah.
I thought Bruce broke his legs.
He just sent us a series of emojis. Kissy face.
Coffee
birthday
bean.
Streamer cake peace sign heart.
That was bunny ears.
Another Illuminati trigger sequence. I'm sure.
Bunny ears. John McCluggage just asked if I'm wearing a life jacket. No, this is a banana.
Yes, and Becky Fowler asked if you were wearing a bib.
Oh, I am underneath the banana.
Banana bib.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give this back because I have one more note over there.
Okay.
Oh, we have more notes. Kaylin J. Hall. Dan, do you know a pilot who is an ornithologist? No. I know someone who sold me a bird feeder who is an ornithologist. But I met her this week. It was magical.
Clearly.
I have some banter for you, Kev.
Yes.
I got you a birthday present.
Oh, God damn it. Why did you do that?
Uh-oh. Are you vamping?
No, okay. Well, yes, we're all abandoning shit.
Well, I was going to give Kevin some. Oh, that looks like. Oh, is that a cake? Yes. You're on the screen. You're on screen with the cake.
I know. It's not really. There's no real way to hide it. It's a cake.
Server, lifetime server. Kale, you can speak to this. You know how to hide a cake when you're sneaking up on a table with the birthday cake.
It's in the shot.
Yesterday.
Who's doing a shot?
Oh, my God. Okay, oh. What are you?
I have a birthday present for you.
I don't. Okay. I'm weary.
It's Shakespeare's birthday.
Okay.
So I wanted to get some things that reminded me of me for you.
If this is a complimentary banana outfit, I'm not wearing it.
That's just filler there. Uh-huh. Yeah, do that one first. Any guesses?
I mean, it's literally... I can go out on a limb and guess what this is.
Take a guess.
It's going to be a banana.
Okay. This is my case that I am the first banana on this podcast.
You're pushing it pretty hard.
That's what I like to do. You know what I mean? Hey, what's up?
Please stop. And it is a banana.
How did you guess?
Perfectly ripened. I am.
Nice. Yeah, come on in, Drew. Come on. Oh, Drew and Danny, can you come up? Can you come up behind the screen again? Come on, come back up. Just to be introduced to the Facebook Live world.
I don't like it when you ask me to do.
I don't
Ooh,
either.
You gotta hold up for that for 1 second.
Okay.
No. Oh.
I bet this is another banana accoutrement. And it is. It is a banana item. I agree. Womp, womp, womp. What the hell is this?
Cricket. What's yellow and rights?
A ballpoint banana!
Wow.
That's from the hit movie Batman with Adam West.
I can't even.
I got you that for being second banana on the podcast.
Okay. I can't even.
And then the big present's next.
Hey, you dropped your banana.
I'll get your banana.
Introduce Drew and Danny.
Can you let us leave?
Yes, please. Give them.
Oh, this is Drew and Danny. You played earlier.
Who played our intro? Plug things. What are you up to?
Oh, hi.
Hello.
We're 2/5 of the band Evelyn. We have a record called Lightful.
Website. You,
oevelyn.com.
O-H.
Like, oevelyn. .com.
Tunes by Evelyn on Twitter.
And are you familiar with the podcast world, Drew?
Oh, yes. Also, I almost wore my So Many Damn Books t-shirt to just try and do like a subtle, and then I thought that was too Dan.
That's very true. I mean,
and I aspire to be more like Kevin.
Why?
Well, I like that answer.
I've never known subtlety.
So Many Damn Books. We like these guys. We're going to do a joint episode at some point.
Yes, I would like that very much.
Surprise.
Yeah, we're in.
Sounds cool. Good.
Okay.
We've booked it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, shake on it. So that's done. Crossover episode. So Many Damn Books. Yeah, it's banana runoff. Sorry, Drew.
I would definitely watch that.
Yeah. Definitely watch that.
Thank you, guys.
Big present, Kev.
Yeah,
big
so this banter. Is something in a frame. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that it's maybe a work of fine Renaissance art or perhaps a photograph of a banana, if I had to go out.
Maybe.
This is going to be good.
I can't even.
Show everybody. No, that stays on. That's part of it.
It stays on. It's a piece of artwork.
Yep.
It is the title page of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. You may have heard of it. Autographed by Dan Bollier. To my number one fan, best of luck, Dan Bollier. And you know someone's famous and a big deal when they have to put their business card on something that they've autographed just to verify. Like, yeah. Unlike that, business card.
That adds value.
Says who?
Hey, you got me out of the screen.
Weird.
Uh-oh, I didn't write a couplet yet.
Oh, weird. And of course, we have pizza too. We have
pizza.
Who wants to come and blow out the candles on Shakespeare's birthday cake?
Timmy.
Okay. Here comes at who but Tim Jacobs on Twitter.
Because what's a birthday party without a birthday cake? I could not get 453 candles on this.
Why not? I'm celebrating Shakespeare's death day, to be clear.
That's pretty dark. Is that why you're wearing the traditional mourning banana?
That's right. This is original practice. They always wore banana costumes.
I couldn't have gotten cheaper candles. Good Lord.
That. Right. All right, quick pop from the room on that. So, while Kevin is attempting to light apparently like 13 candles, MasterChef Junior, I'm still ahead. Weight loss, we're both crushing it, but I'm crushing it more. This is the 99th episode, so the next episode will be our 100th episode spectacular. We've made it, and we have big plans in store. This is basically a pre-party, so you're all coming back hopefully for more.
I'm sure to see my clamoring to come back.
I have other vegetable suits I can wear. That is shockingly true.
It's not that shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a vegetable. Yes.
Can we ask the room if a banana is a vegetable?
No. Thank you.
Not only a no, but a boo.
Hey, to quote myself, I live for boos. What?
All right. Cake what time. Happened? Should we do happy birthday?
We should say happy birthday to Shakespeare.
Happy birthday is fair right, fair use now, so we're good.
Yeah.
Right. So one and a two and a three.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shakespeare.
Timmy.
Yeah!
Shakespeare.
All right, folks. I think that... Does anybody else in the room have any... Liam, you want to air any more grievances before we wrap this up?
We don't have that much.
Okay.
Anyone else? That's, we're good?
That's going to do it for us for this week. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. You can follow us on Twitter at noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ No Holds Barred cast. So, on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, oh, shoot. We didn't get to the birthday punches. I guess we'll have to save those until we're off the air, but don't worry, the doors are locked from the outside. In any case, we'll try harder next time. Till then, my name is Kevin.
Oh, yeah, word of the week. Oh. Word of the week. Word of the week. We go back.
Consanguineous.
Incorrect. It was eh. Eh. As in if faith. In the name of God.
One half of a contraction?
That's correct.
That's not a word. It's half of a contraction.
It definitely eh.
Until next time. My name is Kevin.
Liam's swill. My name is Dan. Say happy birthday, Bill.
Adieu, 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 adieu.